I'd like to have somebody step in.
Oh, yeah. There's been a few times.
You ready to go?
We're ready.
Take a walk.
Okay, we'll call the Senate Committee on Business and Transportation to order. We've got three bills today, fairly simple little things, I believe. And let's see here. Well, I have two representatives, so we'll show some courtesy.
We could probably take their testimony and then switch around if you like this chair. So.
All right. We'll start off, open a public hearing on House Bill 4131A. Did you want to testify on this
sure.
one?
You
can do it from here. Nah, do it from here if you want. Unless you want to go down there.
Let's have the representative come up and introduce it. He's the primary sponsor.
Patrick, you want to introduce it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 4131A allows a person who uses natural gas or propane as a fuel in a motor vehicle to pay an annual special use license fee in lieu of per gallon tax. The measure came to us on a House floor vote of 60-0. There's minimal fiscal impact, minimal revenue impact, no amendments.
Thank you. Representative?
You want a motion?
How about we're official over here
first? I do appreciate
it. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. My name is John Lively. I'm representative from District 12, which is Springfield. I'm honored to be here today to talk about House Bill 4131, and I'm appreciative of Senator Starr for co-sponsoring the bill, and I appreciate the approach to want to move this forward. It is, from my standpoint, a pretty simple, straightforward bill. It's to allow fuel decal in lieu of per gallon tax, and it applies to people using vehicles that use propane or compressed natural gas. There's two or three things this bill accomplishes I think are very important. One is just another way to provide additional incentives for people to convert to a fuel that's less costly and less impactful upon our environment. Mm-hmm. Number two, the bill will allow us to use existing facilities in the state of Oregon, so different than some other alternative fuels in that we have facilities all over the state that are not currently available for people to fuel because of the complications of the gas tax. So this would allow those facilities to sell it because the decal would ensure that the people are paying their fair share. And so from my standpoint, it's pretty basic and common. Senator Beyer knows I'm originally from northeastern Oregon. I was just up to Enterprise, and I just thought about that when I saw a propane dealer in Enterprise that could be selling this fuel. And we know that there's people in LeGrand, fleets that have things that in some cases are worried about going to Enterprise and spending time other places. This would just allow those that already have fleets and use propane or those that are going to convert to be able to purchase that fuel wherever they are in the corners of this state where that's available. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions?
Yes, Mr. Chair, if I can just add a couple of comments.
You sure can, Senator Starr.
Thank you. I appreciate Representative Lively picking this bill up. This is a bill that we had last session that was introduced as a committee bill on the House side and ultimately didn't make it through the process last time. Has to start in the House as it's related to revenue. And I'm pleased to co-sponsor it. I concur with everything the representative said. Just for the committee's knowledge information, when a vehicle uses alternative fuels, those vehicles have to pay what's called a use tax, mm-hmm. Which is the equivalent of the fuel tax in gasoline. And the proprietor that sells the fuel has to be set up to collect that tax, which is a complicated, difficult process, and this bill really doesn't sidestep that necessarily, except that it provides an alternative to those propane dealers, and primarily we're talking about propane because that's the infrastructure that we have all over the state, to be able to sell that fuel as a fuel that's used to, you know, in vehicles, as long as this individual pays their use tax through this decal. Thing I like about it is it utilizes existing infrastructure. We're not subsidizing as government or taxpayers, these tanks all over the state. I mean, we've spent tens of millions of dollars in subsidizing electric fueling stations or electric stations. This doesn't do that. This is private infrastructure already out there. And we're just facilitating a way that the public would have access to it. I think it's a no-brainer, and I hope that the committee would support it. And I appreciate the representative helping to get this thing up and running.
Thank you.
Great.
I just said, this is a may and not a shall, right?
Yes. it allows a person to do it. They can. They don't have to.
Okay, after we pass this bill, will you go to work on the electric car situation and how those people can start paying their fair share?
I certainly would, Senator.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
I have one person signed up. I think it's Sam Sapp. Welcome.
Thank you.
Chairman Beyer, members of the committee, my name is Sam Sapp, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Citizens Lobby. We've looked over this bill. We agree with the bill. We think it should be passed. Short and sweet.
Thank you. We like that.
You get brownie points for that one.
That's the only name. Anybody else who wishes to testify? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing, open a work session. Senator Starr?
Mr. Chair, I move the bill to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 4131A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Just a note, Mr. Chair. We amended the bill in the House to move the effective date, and that helped to alleviate any fiscal. I appreciate the department working with us on that so that we can get this program up and running.
Great. And I would note that this is consistent with the bills we've been passing in the last session to move alternative fuels and cleaner fuels ahead. A lot of work on this. So is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, House Bill 4131A moves to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Starr, would you like to carry that?
Certainly.
Mm-hmm. Close the work session on that, and we will open a public hearing on House Bill 4149. Representative. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Nancy Nathanson, State Representative from District 13. This might look familiar to you. Last year, this proposal passed your committee unanimously. It went to the Senate and passed there. It just got stalled in Ways and Means for no apparent reason other than the crush of end-of-session bills. So we're picking up where we left off. We're bringing it back to you again, and I hope that you will look favorably on it again. I'm going to be very quick. This bill, just to recap, brings the Department of Motor Vehicles into the 21st century of customer service by offering a voluntary, you pay for it yourself, express title processing fee to just hurry things along. If you want to pay the $100 because you need your vehicle title a lot faster, then you have access to this. It's a new self-supporting service for quicker processing of a title. It won't cost any money to the state. There's a net revenue gain after this is up and running. And this title service more than covers the estimated cost. Moreover, though, I want to emphasize that it will not, establishing this new express process will not diminish the typical ordinary service that everyone else would be getting. That should remain the same. So I hope you will vote yes again. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Girard?
The quick question is, what is the ordinary service time turnaround now?
Roughly 3 weeks.
3 weeks? Okay.
This might be around 5 days.
Senator Edwards?
Just a brief comment. I absolutely support the bill, and I agree with everything that Representative Nathanson said, except the assertion that this will bring the DMV into the 21st century, because until they accept Visa, MasterCard,
here we go,
at the counter, they're not in the 21st century. So I'll get off my soapbox now.
I think they're an American Express.
But they do have an ATM in the office.
I know. And you can go over and pull the cash out and then go back to the counter.
I know. Okay. So. Thank you. Anybody else want to get in on this? Guess not. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Most appreciated. Mr. Fuller.
So why didn't this pass last time? Amy can probably bring him
Yeah, that was let Amy come a blast.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Darrell Fuller on behalf of the Oregon Vehicle Dealers Association, which requested this bill in 2013 and again this year. Thanks to Representative Nathanson for introducing it on behalf. My two teenagers decided to spend their spring break in Mexico with about 500 other teenagers from Church of the Nazarene helping to build churches down there. I'm very excited they made that choice. Spring break's coming up in just a few weeks. There are so many teens that wanted to go that they needed extra drivers. I have a commercial driver's license, so they asked if I could drive one of the vans of kids to Mexico. And I checked my schedule, and I could do it, so I said, fine. But I had a problem. I don't have a passport. So I went to the passport website. It takes six to 8 weeks to get a passport. So I wasn't going to get my passport in time. But the passport service, for an extra fee, you can get an expedited passport in 2 to 3 weeks. And I paid the extra money happily. I should have my passport in the next week or so. And I will be partying down in Mexico with my son and daughter and a whole bunch of other people, rebuilding some churches down there. And had it not been for the expedited service that the federal government offered me, I would not have been able to take advantage of that. This is exactly the same thing. There are occasions, not a lot of them, but occasions where somebody needs the title of their vehicle faster than the 3 weeks it takes to process it. And 3 weeks is a pretty good turnaround time for DMV. DMV indicated on the other side that they think they can do it in 5 days in exchange for a $100 fee. We think it's a great idea and urge you to vote aye. Thank you very much. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions?
I speak Spanish.
I know no Spanish at all. Excuse me, Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, I know no Spanish at all. Both my kids speak it, however.
Senator Thompson? No. Senator Girard?
Good luck driving in Mexico. Watch out for speed bumps. And for stop signs, that only means slow down. So just good luck driving.
Mr. Chair, Senator Girard, I appreciate that. At least I'm driving a van and not the church bus.
Okay.
We had a speed bump bill session.
Okay. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Amy.
I'm still waiting for that one.
We took care of it.
For a small fee, we could expedite your testimony.
Mr. Byron, members of the committee,
payable in cash.
Department of Transportation. Not much to say. Uploaded some testimony earlier today. Today the turnaround is around 21 days. It's a little higher lately. Usually it'd be more like 19 days. We project maybe about 5 days to turn around the expedited title. Today we DMV processes maybe about 13 expedited titles under the current law, having to do with odometers or on case-by-case basis. When people have an emergency, we can turn it around. So we do about 1,300 a year at that under the current law. In terms of the money penciling out, I think we have to say nobody knows how many people take advantage of this. It's going to cost some money to implement. Some people take advantage of it. We don't know how many people, but it certainly doesn't have a ways and means referral. And if I may go slightly off topic for a moment to Senator Edwards' question, DMV is working on the project of bringing credit and debit cards to the field offices, and we'd be happy to come and brief you on that if you'd like to have us in your office. So that's what I have on that, Bill.
Yeah, that's a great answer.
I was going to suggest that you could consider the Senator's request using the ARCO model, but I understand they're in a class action suit right now.
Oh, you're right.
That's a different bill.
Yeah, that's a different bill.
Thank you. Questions, Amy? Thank you very much, Amy. Let's see. That's all I have signed up. Is anybody else who wishes to testify on House Bill 4149? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing and open a work session. Senator Starr? Senator Starr, you want to move this one?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I move the bill to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 4149 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on that motion? Seeing none, is there any opposition on that motion? House Bill 4149 is passed to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. We will close on that. We'll open on House Bill 4045. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, carrier on that bill.
Oh, excuse me.
Volunteer.
Senator Monroe. Thank you, Senator. We're getting moving a little too fast here.
House Bill 4045, Mr. Chair. This bill comes to us on a floor vote of 60-0 from the House. It reconstitutes the Well Construction Contractors Continuing Education Committee
and the statutory provisions related to the continuing education programs for licensed water well constructors. It ratifies actions that have been taken on or after January 7th, 2014, and before the effective date of the measure. The measure declares an emergency and would take effect upon passage and signature by the governor. We have no amendments, minimal fiscal impact, no revenue impact, Mr. Chair.
This has got to be the first water-related bill we've had here. All righty. So we are in work session. Excuse me. Public hearing.
Yes, that's
So Raquel?
Yeah.
Word abandon you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and Committee. Director Ward is running a little late, I guess, in a meeting. So some of you may know me previously as a committee administrator, trained well by our committee administrator here, among others. Today, House Bill 4045, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to present testimony on it on behalf of the Oregon Water Resources Department. Again, for the record, my name is Raquel Ransier, and I'm a new Senior Policy Coordinator. House Bill 4045 reinstates the Well Constructor Continuing Education Program and the requirement that well constructors complete continuing education credits for license renewal. Oregon has approximately 300,000 wells, and many of those supply water for drinking. And there's Director Ward. improper well construction or abandonment can lead to groundwater contamination and waste. And so persons who construct, alter, convert, or abandon wells are required to obtain a well constructor's license. And that ensures that they have both the proper knowledge and expertise in order to be a well driller. In 2001, Senate Bill 579 established the Well Construction Continuing Education Program. And this requires that well constructors receive continuing education credits. These credits are approved by the Well Constructor Continuing Education Committee. And so they approve them, and that includes three members from the well driller community as well as one member from the regulatory community. And they need to satisfy this requirement in order to renew their license every 2 years. And so they complete 14 continuing education credits. Two of those must be on well drilling rules and current laws. And they can obtain those credits through clinics and schools, conferences, seminars. They're also available online, and some of them are free of charge. Examples of groups that offer these include the Oregon Groundwater Association, who you'll hear from shortly here, which worked with us to introduce this bill, as well as the International Drilling School of Drilling and National Drilling Association, among others. So this bill, it would essentially reinstate the program that sunset on January 2nd, 2014, and we believe that it helps the continuing education courses help well constructors maintain and advance their skills, and ultimately this helps to protect both the groundwater resources as well as well owners.
Hi, Phil.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Phil Ward with the department. I think Raquel's summarized the bill for you very adequately, so I'd be happy to, with her, stand for any questions you might have.
So just one question. Is there that much changes in well drilling practices that once you've been certified, you need to get continuing updated on it?
Mr. Chair, it's surprising, but the well drilling industry in Oregon, one, I think we have a progressive well drilling industry that are continually kind of moving things forward in terms of how we do the job. And so there is a fair amount of change that occurs, but to say that that everything that we offer in these courses every time they're offered is new would be incorrect. But what these do provide is a forum for when those new things arise, then we have the opportunity to get that information out.
Other questions? Senator Gerard?
Yeah, I actually have two really quick questions. The 14 credits, is that per year or per license period, or what is that?
Mr. Chair and Senator Girard, that is actually every two-year period, so okay. It's 14 continuing education credits
follow,
for 2 years.
Follow up on that. Right. What is the expense to the through the drillers? You know, I mean, is it about $100 per credit hour? How much is it, do you think?
Mr. Chair and Senator Girard, it's actually ranges from free to up to around $40. It varies. There's actually quite a bit of different courses that are offered out there, and so it varies depending on who's offering the course.
One last question. Mm-hmm. Now, the well drillers, do we have someone from them saying that they actually approve of this? So do they have an association or something like that?
Mr. Chair, Senator, hopefully you'll hear from them next.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Other questions?
Oh, my questions are answered.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jury?
Unnecessary. Very good with the regulation.
Mr. Welcome. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jerry Schmidt. I'm here today representing the Oregon Groundwater Association. That association is made up of men and women involved in the groundwater industry. It includes the drillers, also includes a number of other professions, including pump installers, water treatment folks, consulting folks, hydrogeologists, so it's a broad mix of people. So it was interesting just to hear the few questions. We're supportive of continuing ed, and we had continuing ed at the association trying to educate our folks prior to this bill being enacted in 2001, and we're supportive all the way along, regardless of whether the bill was here or not. We'd be offering the education to keep our folks up to snuff. I had a question. We had a coffee after the last meeting in the House side, and the director said, well, gee, you were kind of soft a little bit. You didn't come out with glowing accolades. And I said, well, yeah, I do have some membership that expressed similar concerns of Senator Beyer, that is this cost effective, and is are we getting our bang for our buck? And it's a difficult thing to measure. I don't know how you'd frankly measure whether or not it's actually working. So I didn't have any solution. However, it is something we agree in, continuing ed, and it is a very complex industry. There is a lot of changes going on. We're always in negotiations with the department. One of the fears that I have when we talk about these kinds of things, that unintended consequences come up. I just got a call yesterday on a issue that some of my members have, because they're actually licensed by the CCB. So there was a bill that was passed, as you recall probably, Senate Bill, I think it was 783 in 2013. Now all of a sudden my members are subjected to continuing ed, where they've been offered continuing ed all the way along, but now they have to pay $2,000 to actually be a preferred provider. They have to pass a bond for $20,000, and there's a whole host of requirements. So you can understand how our industry
gets... Jerry, where does that requirement come from?
It comes from the CCB, again, trying to regulate who's giving education, and are they actually qualified to give this education. And I think from the department's CCB's credit, they're probably trying to make it cost neutral, and they establish fees and stuff to try and make it not an impact upon the taxpayer. However, it's a huge impact upon our industry, and so I just had a call into the CCB administrator yesterday, and I'm going to try to see if we can figure out what kind of solutions are available. And it's the same with this kind of bill. If there's problems in the future, if for instance, we're finding our courses repeating too often, and maybe we'll do something like, I think it's similar to the building codes industry, where they've actually grandfathered some people that have been through it for 15 years, figuring out that maybe they don't need as many requirements. I don't know, but so far we've worked very well with the department trying to solve these smaller issues to make it workable and make it something that we can all support. So I am supportive, and I am supportive of the director's comments that we do try to work with the department a great deal and make things smoother for the consumer, not just the industry. So
I'm going to clarify. This
sure.
$2,000 fee and whatever else went with that, that's a CCB charge to your organization as a training agent?
Correct.
Not to the well drillers?
No. Okay. But the problem with the CCB, see, we have members in the groundwater industry that are licensed by the CCB, not licensed by the department. They would be pump installers. They're not licensed by the department. They're licensed by CCB. So we have many members that are licensed by 3, 4, and 5 different agencies. So we have the complex situation of trying to make all these things mesh and make it work, and it gets very complicated. But in this instance, it's been working, and I don't see any issues with it, so we're here to support it.
Questions? Senator Gerard?
Yeah, in the group that you're representing, is there any little subgroup that is kind of a no on this? And the reason I ask that is we have landscape contractors. Some contractors in general, we put continuing ed in pretty rigid continuing ed, and there's kind of a pushback now. So
yeah, I'm still in that work group.
I know that you said, well, if down the road 14 credits might be too much, but it's hard to change once we lock it in statute. So I'm just kind of curious, is there a lot of unanimity in this, support, or is there a little subgroups that are saying, no, we don't want this?
Senator Gerard, Mr. Chair, there is always some pushback in any organization. You always got folks that have one position or another. I think, by and large, we have a fairly strong agreement that this is working. The reason I brought up the other issue, however, is there are times that I do have some pushback, correct? There is some folks that say, well, in fact, there was one driller specifically that told me, well, can't we do some type of cost-effective measurement and find out, in fact, if this is doing the industry or the public some type of good? I don't know how you'd do that. I mean, frankly, that was just beyond where I could think of how you would actually make that measurement. Brought up the issue of we may need to change these things in the future, and I realize when they're in statute, they're locked in pretty hard. Well, that's the way it ought to be. If you're making something like that, it shouldn't be changed. Otherwise, you could put it in rule. But in this case, I guess the shorter the answer is, we do have some unanimity that this is something we strongly will support. But to answer your question specifically, yes, there is always a smaller subgroup that has a pushback.
Well, just a follow-up. You know, what we could do in the bill is put another sunset in it so it's reviewed down the road a ways. And so that would make, so it's not locked in statute. And then to change that, we could change it before the sunset date. This removes the sunset, so this is locked in there pretty darn hard.
Mr. Senator Gerard, Mr. Chair, I guess we wouldn't be opposed to it. I mean, it's certainly it wouldn't. But I brought up the issue in case that we did come back and say we want to look at this again, that you wouldn't say, well, why didn't you talk about it earlier? Well, it's up to the discretion of the committee what they feel that they're comfortable with.
But, it always is.
Yeah, exactly.
Senator Starr?
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your testimony, and part of your testimony was that if this wasn't required, your association would do similar training on new techniques anyway.
Correct.
I really don't know that this is necessary. The industry seems like they're not going to want to be left in the dark ages, and as things change and new technologies come up, folks are in business to make money and compete, and there's a market out there for well drillers, and you're going to want to be the best at what you do, and I'm questioning whether this is necessary at all. And I'm going to, Mr. Chair, my intention is to vote no today, and I expect there's enough votes for this to pass, and then I'm going to make a couple of calls to some well drillers in my district and see if is this something they feel like it's worth doing, and if they tell me it is, then I would reserve the right to change to a yes on the floor. But we do this all the time, and it costs time and money. I mean, these guys are out there busting their rear ends trying to make a living, and they got to spend however much time doing this rather than out there drilling or marketing or trying to run their business.
Senator Edwards.
Partly in response to Senator Starr's comments, yes, we've had testimony that the association would offer training anyway, but it remains to be seen whether well drillers would feel compelled to take that training. And so I am assuming, although I would like perhaps some affirmation, that there is some sort of public interest that is being enhanced or protected by continuing education requirements, whether it's a consumer interest, somebody that is hiring, or an environmental, hiring a well driller, or some sort of environmental interest that is being protected by having well drillers that are up to speed on current practice and techniques and whatnot. So,
Mr. Ward.
It's Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, Phil Ward of the department. And certainly, Senator, we do feel like there's a public interest in ensuring that there's the proper training required of folks who are sticking holes into the aquifers of the state in terms of them being able to do it appropriately. And we think there's a strong public interest in that piece. And indeed, the folks that are well engaged in Jerry's Association, and Jerry's Association offers the majority of the training that we cooperate with, the folks that are engaged actively in associations like that will probably come and take some of the training. It's the folks that aren't engaged in the associations that don't get that training. And the reality is, we don't inspect every new well that's drilled out there. Our goal is to get 25% of the wells that are put in the ground every year inspected. So that means whatever percentage that we don't get that year, we have to rely on those folks having the proper training, because we don't have the staff to put eyes on every hole that goes into the ground.
Well, can you talk about what does it take to get licensed as a well driller?
That's what I was going to ask.
We'll let Raquel brought that all up.
Where I'm going on that one, just so you know and you can address it, is I don't have any question in my mind that you want to make sure that the people who are drilling the wells know what they're supposed to do.
Yes.
The question that I think the Senator Starr and others are raising is, once they've demonstrated that they know that, what do you get with the additional training?
Mm-hmm.
So, in terms of public protection.
Mm-hmm. So Ms. Ranciere, Mr. Chair, I think brought some of those statistics with her, so if, with your permission, we'll let her rattle some of those off if we can.
But no.
So, Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record again, Raquel Ranciere. And so well constructors, in order to get a license, they take an exam, and then they're required to have 1 year of experience. So that's the requirements for initially getting the license.
So that would be 1 year of experience working with someone who is certified?
That's correct.
So can you get to the second piece? So once they've demonstrated that they are qualified, what is the public benefit in requiring them to do additional training?
So, Mr. Chair, and I think it might be good for Jerry to add to this, but certainly there are, as Jerry indicated, this is an industry that is not static. It is an industry that's progressing, and we look at different technical issues relative to industry practices as a part of this educational piece, or new rules that are going in place. These training focuses on a lot of these things. So I think the question is open that Senator Girard referenced, is 14 credit hours the right number? That number is in rule, so it can be adjusted by rule if the necessity arises. But certainly this is not a static industry in Oregon. It's an industry that is developing, is progressing, and there are new techniques that need to come to the well drilling community in toto at some point in time.
Further questions? You know, I'm thinking this is one that we may want to carry over until Tuesday to give people a chance to think about it.
Yeah, I'd like to just have a phone call or two, a couple folks.
I would like to also consider putting a sunset on it. Put a sunset on it. I mean, this removes the sunset, but we can put a sunset
Well, we have time, Senator, if you want to go get an amendment to do that, to do that.
6 years.
I guess we could ask, would you, Patrick, could you just get one?
I can, Mr. Chair.
So we can consider it, we'll just do that.
Any input? Anybody wants to write on
and Senator Thompson.
While you're going to hold it over, because I didn't want to hold this up, but it means you're going to hold it over. Has your association looked at changing the number of hours?
A long session would be.
It's 14.
Hold on, guys.
14 in 2 years seems like quite a bit. Have they ever tried to say, well, let's do 4 a year? Like, I have a pesticide license, applicators pesticide. We have to take 16 hours of credit in 5 years. And we can only take so many a year, so you can't just go in and take it 1 year and not show up yet. You take, like, four credits of core a year and then four of other. And so it forces you to take a few hours of credit over a five-year period. Have you guys looked at different, because all these things are, we have all these different boards and all their credit requirements seem to vary vastly. 14 seems like a lot in 2 years. Have you guys ever talked about less or spread it out more? Or
Mr. Chair, Senator Thompson, we have preliminarily discussed some of that, but not to any depth. We have such a broad range of things we deal with, so we'll have continuing ed not just on drilling techniques, but on safety equipment issues, ODOT issues. We bring in a lot of consultants to CPR classes. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole gamut of things that it's not just drilling. It's a whole bunch of things that we bring into. So when the 14 hours seem like quite a bit, realize that's not 14 hours on drilling. It's a whole gamut of things. And they are fluid because they do change. And, for instance, like the CPR classes, you have to be currently certified, so you can't just take it once and don't have any refresher courses. And it's a fairly dangerous occupation because there's a lot of mechanized equipment and a lot of things going on, so you have to be current and all that. The short answer is we haven't really studied the issue of how many hours is adequate.
One of the things, following up on Senator Starr's point, that I think makes some sense is, to me, you can make a pretty good case that there's a need to have an attendance to make sure that people who are certified know how the law and the rules and stuff have evolved. There's that. Then there's the second piece where I think where the senator was going, which is there's some good practices, best practices stuff that probably are more in the case of business, that I could see why the trade association would want to provide those, but I'm not sure that they necessarily ought to be required. So that's a discussion. Think about it. I think, Senator Ron?
Yeah, I actually have one more comment or question. Do you offer online courses for the credits?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we do. The department principally offers online education for their rules requirement, which was offered to try to get at some of the problems of having rural drillers out there in the middle of nowhere trying to comply with the rule requirements, and they can't get to some place where they can actually take the thing. They can actually take it via the computer and on online classes. Other people offer online, I mean, anything from the National Drilling Association to a whole host of other community colleges and everything else. But, yes, the answer is there are those type of classes that are offered.
Would all of those qualify?
We take any class that is presented to the Continuing Education Committee, and they have to review that criteria to see if, in fact, it meets the qualifications. Yes.
But to follow up, and you touched on it, for somebody in Harney County, you know, if the courses are offered in Portland and Eugene, that's a heck of a lot more burden than someone that lives in Portland and Eugene. So I would like to make sure that, you know, they can get the 14 credit hours online, because that just saves them a heck of a transportation cost, overnight, you know, lodging and whatever. So I think that's important to be answered as well.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Anybody else wish to testify on this? Okay, we will close the public work session on this, or excuse me, public hearing on this, and we will carry it over until Tuesday.
Tuesday, yes.
Good enough. And that's what we have. Is there anything else for the good of the order today? We are adjourned. Today we are adjourned. Anything else for the good of the